This is an MUT Radio podcast.
We had speakers from abroad. I remember one speaker was from North Carolina, and we also had a speaker from DHET. But what was shared with us in that aspect is that students' opportunities to study abroad are there for us as universities to tap into, which is very important for us. So we also got some experience from those that have walked the road. They shared with us some building blocks on how to go about establishing partnerships for the benefit of our students in our universities. And also the internationalization partnerships for students, not only students, but also academic staff. And also the good thing, also for administrative staff, there are benefits that we can get from partnering, especially with DHET. So I'm going to stop here today, but today in a nutshell, we are just going to have proceedings based purely on entrepreneurship. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy this day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you, Prof. That was quite good to kick us off. Yeah, it's an exciting day ahead of us. So our next session is on entrepreneurship in the Global South. So the first two speakers have sent in a video which we'll play for you a little later. So we're going to start with the speaker that is here, which is Mr. Andy Lemafa, who is a local coordinator for Ranyaka. Mr. Lemafa was born in Umlazi. He graduated from Mangosuthu University of Technology. So he's one of our own, and we're always happy to have someone of our own represent us in such an important stage. He's an experienced cost accountant. He also has extensive experience in youth and community development as general secretary at the UKZN Student YMCA and director of L Consulting. He's a former council member of our university, MUT, and a former head of programs for the Goodman Foundation. We've invited Mr. Mafa to speak in the past, and his presentations are always delightful to engage with. I have no doubt that you will enjoy his presentation this morning. Mr. Mafa, whenever you're ready, sir, the stage is all yours. I see he's still busy loading his presentation. So just as we wait for his presentation, I think you can just do an introduction of the work that you do. I'm quite excited about the work that he does, and I'm hopeful that our live audience here and our audience that are joining us online will be quite excited as well. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Greetings to the Vice Chancellor, the Acting Vice Chancellor, Professor Ramogale, and greetings to everyone, to the management of MUT, and to all the academics that are in here, and also the people that are online and students. You will forgive us. There seems to be, Lisa said she won't disappoint me, but she has. Let's hope she would probably put up this presentation up very quickly. So we usually send a short bio because we usually want to use an introduction to actually make you understand why we do what we do and why we do it the way we do it. So I used to work in this establishment actually as a cost accountant for a number of years. In 2018, just before, actually there was not even thinking around COVID, I decided to leave cost accounting to pursue community engagement. I know it doesn't relate, but he is a cost accountant, leaving a profession to actually pursue a career that is usually regarded for social science people. But it was out of a number of things that but I'm going to mention two for now. One, in the community engagement space, especially in the ground itself, you find that you have very few professionals with various expertise that actually go to that space to actually do work. I'm not saying social workers are not professionals, but you find that majority of people that are usually there are a lot of social workers, a lot of community development people, but there are no expertise like your architects, your town planners, your accountants, your lawyers are not found in that space. It's just the way it is right now. So a number of us, I'm not alone, we made this decision. Even our CEO at Ranyaga was a professional town planner who had a business in Pretoria. He shut down the business to move his skills and his capacities to the space of community development. So a number of us as professionals in that space are very, I would say we are persuaded that there needs to be particular attention that is given to developing certain spaces, and professionals need to be there. I'll make one example. So there is a school in Umlaz, I'm sure you know it. The name of the school is Velabahlege. So it's not supposed to look like this. Let's try while I'm still continuing with this intro. Yeah, thank you. That probably would work, extender. So what we did, we started what we call a foundation in the school. The idea behind the foundation was to, again, bring in professionals who used to study in the school to come and foster development of the school beyond what the principal can do. You know, sometimes we forget that principals are almost regarded as directors or CEOs of those schools. Yet when you look at their training, it's not such that a principal can actually be in that capacity. Not because I'm saying they're not well-trained or whatever, but you are taking a teacher, you are putting him in a CEO position who has never been trained in certain things. So certain private companies don't trust principals with millions and millions of rands to develop schools. So we started a foundation that we brought in an architect, a businessman, a lawyer, a civil engineer, and an events or a person who's able to present certain things to people. We brought them together. The architect designed a 100 million structure of improving Velabahlege to what it is now, to a campus it will be in future. I think recently we just received 300,000 from the Motsepe Foundation because of having efforts that are done by expertise that the had to design the school for free. Designed the whole project of 100 million for free. Because he believed in the things we shared with him about what the township is going to be like. Thank you. So the thinking behind what I'm going to present to you is driven by those kind of individuals. Individuals who are saying, look, there is a need in a space because there is no moolah in it. We won't have people flock into developing it. But if it doesn't develop, a certain section of our society begins to become undesirable. Let's put it that way. I'm sure most of you here who are a higher SLM don't want to live in the township. Me and my wife decided to buy a house in the township because of what we believe. We had options. We could have bought a house in Toti and drive into Umlazi and do the work and leave to Toti. But our thinking again is, how can you service the people you don't live among? How do you know their pain points? I mean, one of the things I experienced when I moved into Umlazi from Glenwood was gunshots every evening, without fail, like around about 8 o'clock, like a series of gunshots, a series of them. So, because we know different people, right? So I write, again, the resource of people. I write to a friend of mine who's in a particular office in government. I say, hey, there is this situation. What is your response to it? I think it was 3 weeks later, we found ourselves not having gunshots because the government institute said, I don't know if you've seen it, there's a patrol car that goes around Umlazi, two of them. One is a H1, the other one is a VW Kombi. that patrols Umlazi consistently for certain things. It's a response initiative that came out of the Premier's office to respond to these gunshots that keep on happening in Umlazi. I'm not saying it happened because of me, but I'm saying there were a number of people who began to use their relationships to garner response to an issue that, not in a bad way, a normal, maybe a citizen doesn't have those relationships, could have not done anything about. So, and there's no money we've used on this initiative so far. The 300,000 Motsepe has given to Vela Bahleka, there was no money given. I think the only thing that was done, that was money, was the geotech needed to kind of look at the space so he can design something proper. So we had to pay the geotech to do that. You know, and the quantity surveyor did that 100,000 work for free, because one of the business people in the foundation has that relationship. I hope we get each other. So as we do this, I want you to understand that our approach, though we're talking entrepreneurship, which we will, our approach is that the bigger issue that is happening in the township especially is that there is no building of the economy in that space. There's no active thinking around the economy. So I'm a third generation in Umlazi. So maybe let's talk around the history of Umlazi a bit. So I took a few things just to highlight the mentalities around Umlazi. So Umlazi was established as a township, not as a place, as a township in 67. I didn't realize that before that there was an American mission that was occupying Umlazi before this. I didn't realize this. When you read, you begin to find things. But as a township for native laborers, it was in 67 that it was established, for displaced Katomena native laborers. Interesting enough, my grandmother was part of these people. That's why I'm saying I'm a third generation. My grandmother was moved from Katomena and was moved to Umlazi G-section, given a house. My grandmother was what we call a kitchen girl. You know, that's what they were called those days. She was a kitchen girl, essentially. And it was very important for the government of the day to give these native laborers work. And interesting enough, do you know that the people who live in Katomena, they walk to work in town? That's why you see so many shacks there. Because Durban is the economic hub, or even at that time it was an economic hub. There was no limitation for people to engage the space. But this movement meant something economically, even in the thinking that was prevailing in these people. Okay. The other thing I want to note, there was no sense of permanence. If you go to the first generation of Umlazi, they still feared being displaced. They didn't know if this was permanent. So they didn't live like that. I'm sure some of you in this room are like that, or they have family like that, that you work in the urban areas. When you retire, you move with your whole money and your pension to the rural area. I don't know if I'm the only one who saw that, but that's been the phenomenon in Umlazi. People who are older, the first, second generation, never established themselves as a home in Umlazi. That's why we even use this phrase, Gisaya Emakaya. That phrase comes from this thinking. There was no sense of permanence in these places. It wasn't home. It wasn't home. So most money that was spent in the first generation, pensions or whatever, they were not spent, most of them, in Umlazi. So I want you to see the economic factor of that. Here are people who've worked for a number of years. They are beginning to stop working. I know a family who are three houses from my house. That dad moved, sold the house, moved with all his pension to the rural area to live a life there without chaos. So there's this phenomenon that is a mentality, this. So distance from the economic hub. Number two, no sense of permanence, which means they were not actually planning anything that is futuristic. No one was planning 20, 30 years down the line. No one was thinking my property is 50,000 now, it could be 250 in 5 years' time or 10 years' time. It could be 900,000. Right now in Umlazi, there are 900,000 houses. Imagine if my grandmother or whoever knew this. But they had these properties that they actually didn't think that there's a future value in them. So I wanted to think, when I think home, remember, home ownership has economic value. So if we think of the economy from Umlazi, think of this thing of people not thinking permanence, if they're not thinking permanence, they're not thinking economic value, therefore they're not actually dealing with anything that could develop that space. Another thing I wanted to highlight, these people were coming from a structured governance community where there was Amakhosis and Nduna and family, to a place that was organized around the job. And this is very disintegrating. I hope you can still even feel it now, how disintegrating jobs are. I know it's a good thing to get a job somewhere, but if you're going to get a job and be disconnected to structures that govern and secure your life, you begin to lose what we call value system. I'll make an example for you so you can understand. Who has observed the taking over of Muslim of Morningside Musgrave Overport in this room? Do you understand that what makes them take that place over is not even money, it's their value system, their integrated value system that makes them, that is undergirding family, undergirding certain rules, that makes them, this governance makes them easy to drive the economy. With disintegration, with a job mentality, you're not even thinking business. I mean, right now they are buying a street. I don't know what that street is. It is Woolworths. They've bought it from that bakery. Those who like cakes, I know they know that bakery. They've bought that whole street. Bread Ahead. Yeah, problem keys. They've bought that whole street. The arrogating value of that is not the money. It is this. If people are disintegrated, they don't have a common thing of talking about. They don't share common values. If they don't share common values, there is rampant distrust. Black people don't trust each other. Even stock fails. But because of a value system, so when you went to Durban or wherever, got a job, you disconnected from a value system. It's every man for himself. Is they don't have cousins, they just have sisters. Even now, they have sisters until a particular age. Once you are 30, hey, we go away. Economy that disintegrates. So I want you to think about this as a mentality, so you'll understand why our model is doing what it's doing. So we see this as an economic issue, not as just a social issue. I don't know if you understand me. This is an economic issue, because inside of a governed space, it's easy to administer resources. It's easy to have agreement. It's easy to begin development. Try doing development in a place where people don't agree. I'm sure you know Amadela Ngokubona Emangosuthu. So you'll have a phenomenon of disintegrated people. What it does. Disintegration causes rampant crime, lawlessness. The one who has the biggest muscle rules the place. You'll know this in one of the places working in Cape Town, Chicago. Gangsters basically run the space, such that even our cricket game there, it's gangsters who run it, because we're trying to keep our streets without crime. So we partnered with them. We're not dealing with drugs yet. We just don't want shooting in the street. So we decided to have them run our cricket league in streets, because they are basically the ones that are running muscle in that space. So I don't want you to take lightly when life disintegrates, because it determines who becomes in power. Just give you background of understanding Umlazi better, so you'll know what you're dealing with. Another part was, there's never been a plan to develop townships economically. Even in the district development model, you know, there's a development around, if ever there was no Mangosuthu in Umlazi, that district development model will not touch Umlazi, actually. It's the money that is constructing Mangosuthu that is sitting inside the district. But in terms of thinking, where is the township in the next 20 years? No one is having that discussion. No one is having this discussion. So there's an unstructured, disorganized economic development. That's why we find containers everywhere. You find people are developing business in a sporadic way. It's not structured. No one is thinking ahead in terms of saying, these chicken dust places that are emerging everywhere, it's a big economy. How do we structure this economy? How do we make sure that chickens are beginning to be produced closer or in Umlazi? Who are they buying charcoal from? Are they banking their money? Are they able to actually realize their capital gains? I'm sure there are professors in the economics, you know, department here. This could be a curious case. It's a business. It's a serious business. Chicken dust is a big business in Umlazi. There's a guy who owns almost 80% of those chicken dust. It's called Ebumnandini. He owns 80% of them. I think he's bought 2 houses now in Umlazi. So I hope you get when I'm saying we're looking at the history. I'm trying to give you a picture from our point of view, what we look at. So when we talk through our model, you understand what are we trying to respond to, right? So who are we? So we are an urban planning NPC. Like I said, our leader, our CEO is an urban planner, qualified urban planner. And in our team, there are various skills. We're just missing a lawyer. I hope we could find a lawyer one day who wants to join us. But our big issue is that we co-create. We are not in the business of actually running, we're not a charity. We want to co-create with the community, meaning if the community doesn't want to come on board and partner, we don't really get interested as well. But we want to co-create and we implement solutions for better everyday living in neighborhoods, towns, and cities. Our issue is that it's people, there is two of us. Jay is sabotaging me. Are we okay? So our initiatives are always people-led. They are citizenship-centered. Whatever we do in a place has to be people citizen-led. It must be place-based, meaning you must acknowledge that places have a mindset. They have things that they're about. If you engage a space for development, you don't think about a place, you will be disappointed. You'll wonder, I'm giving these people so much money. Why they are not changing? Oh, I'm releasing so much resource. Why there's no change? It's because you're not thinking of place. Place has life, soul, history, like that job mentality. You may do as many entrepreneurship courses as you want, but acknowledge the fact that we like jobs. All right, come on. We like jobs. Job security, job, you know, no stress, job. So that mentality is a very, if you're thinking of Umlazi and don't think of jobs as a, almost like as a stronghold, you have to deal with inside of a child's mind. You can train as much as you want. You can even give as so much startup capital as you want. That job security phenomenon needs to be cracked out and be removed. I think COVID showed us. There's an interesting story I wanted to tell around that. So I left today, 2018 here. I won't gossip what my CFO said, but the issue was there is no money nonprofit, Mr. Mafa. There is no money. Go and check what happened here during COVID. I'm just saying, go check. So you'll understand that job security is a myth in the current world we live in. Your life can change overnight. Imagine the person in Ukraine who had a very nice job. So the idea of confronting the job mentality is very important. So this is where we are. This is our spread. We have 22 partners that we work with around the country. We're in 8 provinces, and we're in these places, Umlazi and Gwamashu. We've just activated Gwamashu. We have 2 universities on board, and they approach us. We don't approach mostly universities. They must approach us. They must see opportunity in what we do and say, I would like to do something in this area. So Stellenbosch has approached us. MMMU has approached us as well, and the city of Tshwane, and other people respond. So what do we do and how do we do it? So I want to explain this so that you understand that when we're talking about entrepreneurship and the whatever, this is where the thing starts, shifting things. So the first thing we do is that we do a scorecard of a place. That's why we said place is important. Score Umlazi. We have 94 points. Some of the people in here participated in that scorecard. We have 94 points that we want to measure in Umlazi, what's going on. So we do a scorecard, almost like an IDP process. But that is not rushed. You know, the municipal one is done in a rush. We don't do it in a rush. Number 2, out of that IDP, we begin to report back to the community how they think their place looks like. Like Umlazi is scoring bad on crime, bad on opportunities for business, bad on many things, you know? So this is what we do first. And this is important because we are using a town planning thinking to make people understand their place. And we report through models that sometimes are privileged to the few. We take them to the community. We take map like these for the community to actually look at their place, for someone to point their house and look at their street and look at everything that is around them from a bird's eye view so they can think properly what's going on in their place. An example, there is right now there's an initiative of putting up, what do you call this? It's fiber. But fiber can only be put in the houses that were in the plan of Umlazi a long time ago. You know that. So the many sheikhs we have in Umlazi won't get fiber. That's injustice, right? A plan came up. A partner in Cape Town designed what you call a pole, like an electric pole, where we can. To solve the issue. Because also of the landscape of Umlazi. Some places in Umlazi, even if you are in the planned house, you won't get fiber because of the landscape. So place makes you think of different initiatives than what is normal in the place. So it's important to understand space and understand challenges of people, everyone, not a few. The second issue we do is this. This is a lot of work. I drink a lot of coffee. Like I said, I drink a whole lot of coffee with various stakeholders. I go to a shack, I go to a beautiful house. The idea there is that you need to actually have a face. You need to connect to people's stories. You need to really do this. Without building these networks, there's no way we're going to do what we have in mind. So listening to people's stories, when someone say, hey, Mr. Maff, I'm interested in what you are doing, it's a matter of a visit. That's the important part. I'm not saying you're going to do anything about every story, but you listen to the story to connect the dots, because this story can connect to this story. She might be a resource for the next person. So it's important to build this network. And don't try and formalize it. Don't do that thing of the association of. Just build real, authentic, personal relationship. I know you're gonna have people calling at awkward times when they're in crisis because they know you. It's okay. It's part of actually being on the ground in a community that you build these networks that are very personal. If you don't build them on a personal platform, your professional platform doesn't have the energy of managing expectations. If you say to a place you are coming from Mangosu, to expectations, they rise very quickly. But if you come as you, you can manage a whole lot of stuff. You know, you dress down a bit. Don't be, you know, because you are going to a particular place, you understand people. So this makes you really, really be part of the community. They begin to relate with you differently. They will call you first before they call the counselor. That's how it works. Because they know you may not be able to do anything, but you can make a significant call. So you understand. And so this network is two-way. There's the one that you build in the local space. There is the one that you are building with corporates. So we do two things. We meet corporates and other institutions while we are meeting. Sorry. I'm sorry about that. So you build two networks. You must build corporate network and build also. No, you don't have to. It's in there. Just turn it off. So you build these two. I'm sorry about that. So you build these two things, meaning you meet a lot of corporates. That means we took up a membership in the Durban Chamber. I'm not a business, but we took up a membership in the Durban Chamber because we wanted to use their network. When the flood hits, the people that gave us help to help our communities was all the businesses inside Durban Chamber. I didn't have the money to distribute food, but they did. We ended up distributing food for days. Even now, there's still food in halls in Umlazi because we're diligent enough to build this. So that's a big thing you need to do. Implementation of projects has to do with this working better. So the next thing you do, you help the community think about the community differently. You begin to talk about economic terms with them. Like, let's make an example. We do something we call teaching people about money. I don't want to embarrass people here. How many people do budgets here? Don't raise your hand. Don't do it. But if ever in this room, professionals, learned people don't do budgets, imagine how it is in the township. So we begin to actually go to them and say, even if it's 350, we need a plan around it. Even if grant, if ever you have three kids and you are making 1,450, we need a plan around that. So we go and actually teach people how to actually take care of the resources that exist in the place first. Number two, where are those resources spent? That's where this part of economy comes in. There is no chat around where the money is spent, but we need to know where it's spent. The third thing that we do, we digitize everything. We are launching this. It's ready now. We're happy about it. So how does this relate to entrepreneurship? So I'm going to skip this. It's not important. This is the feedback from one township we did of the scorecard. I don't want to go through that. I want to come here. So inside a community, most people, when they look at sports, they don't see entrepreneurship. Right now, we are spending almost 250,000 on buying sport gear. There is no sport gear shop in Umlazi. Shamas in Umbilo is getting all the money. So whenever people look at these things, they don't think money, entrepreneurship. So because of our initiative, we're beginning to say there must be a sport shop that sells sport equipment in Umlazi. Even Mangosuthu, if I go to the sport department and find out where you're actually buying your kits. So when we think the economy, we need to think in detail. So sport is an economic factor. There is money that is spent here. And the question is it being spent in the businesses in Umlazi? If it's not, why? Why the money is being spent in Umbilo? Strong schools. I think I made an example. And alumni coming together to put their skills to actually bring a 100 million project in Umlazi. How many jobs are there? Just by providing their skills, they were able to draw 100 million into Umlazi. We may have not gotten there, but the fact that we have 300,000, that's money. And we're hoping to get the netball courts and the hall from the lottery. Because they are building netball courts because of the Netball World Cup. So they said, yeah, we can build that thing for you. Just make sure that inside there's a netball court. And we said, aha, we got our hall, 1,500-seater hall. That is a sporting facility inside. Without those professionals, we wouldn't have known that information. There would have been no prospect of the future for Vela Bahleke. And that's an economic decision. That means out of those professionals coming together to build a strong school, there is an economic factor. There is a township reality that the economy can change. We can go on and on. In Gwamashu right now, we're always saying people rush into going to social workers, to psychologists, especially now. Kids are troublesome, right? Everybody who has a medical aid is taking their children to psychologists. But our argument is that psychologists sometimes do not know what you are dealing with in the township, but the social workers do. So a friend of mine started a private company of social work, of social workers to actually deal with drugs issues, a private company. That means you pay via medical aid to address your issue. I'm just giving you phenomena that we have around here. So all this, even ECDs, in Umlazi, there are almost more than 200 ECDs. This is serious money. Minimum payment is 500 rands per child. There is serious money here. So the question is, are entrepreneurs in Umlazi aware of their space? So one of the solutions we are bringing is that we want to distribute more data to drive the economy around these areas. Imagine if ever these ECDs were doing bulk buying and you were the provider as a business of all the food that they are feeding children. You are delivering the oats, the milk, whatever. Right now, they are still going individually to go buy. So those are things that we talk about with the community. How can we actually begin to do things with you? In Stellenbosch, we took, even in Stellenbosch, these things is in the Valazienze. We took an abandoned clinic. We turned it into a hub, a business hub for co-creation. To drive the economy, you do need these spaces where people can actually sell their stuff. So this hub is next to a university. So essentially, the food that is sold here, students are the consumers because a beautiful, relaxed space was built outside of campus. So they began to go to it. And there's selling of clothes, selling of leather bags. Nice. These are professional chefs who've set up a place to cook. So the issue is, what are we doing with our spaces that are neglected? I know there's an attempt in Mangosuthu to buy the place across the road. I keep praying for you that things come through. I know, because I'm part of the committee that's in that space. I know it's difficult. But you take that space and develop it, the environment changes. The economy changes in that space. Another issue, community safety. I don't know if you've seen, Mangosuthu should be paying a levy on this. I don't know if you've seen people who are watching people at night in Umlazi. So Mangosuthu must pay a levy then. So a community in D section had a lot of crime at some point. They decided, a small community, they were the first ones to do this. They came together. At the time, we were taking over a park. We were cleaning a park to take it over from the municipality because it was beginning to become a crime area. This community began to take their street committees and began to patrol. But the agreement was each and every house voluntary will pay 50 rands to pay the boys that are patrolling in the morning and in the evening. They did it by themselves. We're just the back house of guiding them that don't do it this way, don't do it this way. Make sure that no one is imposed. Make sure that there's a central place to collect the money. It doesn't go to individuals, to a salon, to a person who has a business, as a collection space, who has a register that is presented monthly to the community who is paying and who is not paying. They started that initiative. They were basically the workers from Umnyando Mall to a chicken dust, if you know Mlazi. They watch all that area to A section. I think in 4 months, all of Umlazi started to move because they saw that. I do not know if in other places they pay levy. This is the only one we support. And out of that, there's something we have in mind. We would like to start private security companies that can actually be paid a proper levy now for securing Umlazi. So a community safety issue is not a voluntary issue all the time. It's a business issue. We found out in our research that Umlazi doesn't have alarms, you know, sirens. When someone comes into your house to bother you, your neighbors won't know because you just don't want to put an alarm. Just something to make noise to everyone. Wake up everyone. In Glenwood, I had one. A big horn. That if something happens, I want everyone to know something is wrong. Imagine how much business you can have if you can put those horns on. We don't have panic buttons. We don't have cameras. So when you're talking community safety, you're talking business. It's not a community issue. The reason why it's like that is because you are beginning to involve people who have expertise. That's why I'm saying to leave the social worker alone in the community is criminal. This is Kayamandi. What we did here is that whole thing I was talking about of putting systems to secure. So we created almost like a private network of their walkie-talkie system. So when they secure a place, they can talk to each other easily without having a problem. So this is the area that is secured. And in schools, schools are hosting these things because they also secure those places. So there is an economic element around this. Taking over spaces, like we took over a park in Umlazi. That park hosts a monthly market now. We didn't just clean it. We took it over. Every month, there is a market. Why should you go to iHeart when there's a market in Umlazi? So our hope is there that more parks will be taken over, cleaned up, decorated, and entrepreneurs will begin to use those parks to garner business in that space. So here's what we're hoping for. Like I said, we're hoping to actually turn these street patrols into proper security companies. How much do you pay on DSTV? How many DSTVs are around? In Glenwood, I was paying 610 for an armed response. And someone to accompany when I come back at night, I phone them. Can you please watch me till I close my gate? 610 a month. Why can't we not pay this in the township when we're able to do DSTV at what? What is it now? 600 rands? So the idea that there's no money for this is a lie. People can pay for security in Umlazi. Maintenance. We are creating a database of accredited maintenance people. I want to change my plumbing in my house. I can't find a credible person because I'm not sure how I'm going to vet them. So we need to create a space where these general people who do work can actually be recognized so that when you want to do work, you know where to go. Almost like an Uber for maintenance work in the home. The person is rated. There is a record, what they've done, who they've done with, how they did the work, there's a profile. By that, you are beginning to create more work for those people. I won't go through this. Currently, we've taken 20 businesses from Umlazi. I don't know, those who go to Umnyando, they will know Zinhle's sweet shop. If you don't know, well, go visit. This lady was looted before July last year, I think. Was it last year? I even forgot now. We essentially supported her to move the shop from Pilane to Emyando. She had employed 2 people. Now she employs 7. She's opened another shop in Pilane. She's going to employ 3, a bigger one. She's trying to redirect traffic that goes in Sipingo to buy sweets, cakes. Essentially, the guys who are selling you sweets in Mangosuthu outside now, they're ordering from her. Another thing that we don't know, to redirect traffic. What are things that are we buying outside of Umlazi? That's what we bought in Umlazi. I'll make one example when it comes to what we are thinking right now. So everybody's been complaining about Somalians, right? Let's be truthful, people. How? So there is a complaint in the township around foreign shops. So in engaging the community, we want to create what we call a guerrilla distribution system. We're talking with Tiger Brands and we're talking to Premium Foods to rent spaces for distribution of specific products that we know are bought in the township at a high volume rate. We're working with certain individuals who are interested in that to say, let me rent your 2-bedroom, whatever, and stock 3 pallets of rice there. In a VD, we want to have at least 7 of those. So we're killing the cost of keeping those goods. Probably if the rice is 120, in our distribution, it might be 100 rands. The idea is that people do have resources. They do have houses. But no one has ever actually spoken to them about the opportunity. And Gina burned. There's no distribution space in Umlazi. Pachivens is trying something in this Pingo side somewhere. But the issue is the money is still going out of Umlazi. It's not staying in Umlazi. And we are comfortable with that. I don't even want to talk about professionals. I don't even want to go there. They are criminals. If you check their spend, it's not spent in Umlazi. So our hope is to have a buy in Umlazi day probably next year where we say just buy with 1,000 rands in Umlazi. Spend 1,000 in Umlazi. Not at Pick and Pay in Umlazi. So professionals are biggest criminals that are not actually doing the professional thinking of thinking. They live in Umlazi. They drive out in the morning. They come back at 5. They leave again, or they go to the gym, come back at 8, leave again in the morning. That's what they do. And you've seen traffic. Traffic is heavy in Umlazi. That means there are people who are paying around about 5,000 rands plus on a car. So if you're saying there's no money in Umlazi, you are lying. The issue is there's no services that these professionals could actually get. So what do we want universities to do? Just in closing, we created an app. This app is a data collection thing. All this data that we actually use for initiatives is created here. This is basically, there's a visual spaza, which will deal with that guerrilla shop. So you don't need to go to it. You can order via visual spaza and then your milli-milli or rice is delivered. But the idea behind this data is that everyone in the community can organize their life easy. All data, leagues. I mean, there are 10,000 boys playing soccer in Umlazi. It's not organized anywhere in a software. 10,000. So the idea is to have an app that does that. It can be on your phone. It can be anything. You can organize anything. If you want to organize soccer, you can put it in here. Have a league that runs. If you want to organize a stock fail, you can have it here. Have it records that runs. Everything that runs on an app. So this is a store that we want to create inside the app. You can send money. You can buy whatever. Because you're already doing this inside VodaPay. You are doing inside this Apple Pay. You are doing it. It's just that it's not local. So our app dashboard looks like this. It tells you how much you're spending in a place when you are doing a specific project. So I just want to go to the end. So what do we want universities to do in our ambition to create an economy in Umlazi and have entrepreneurs emerge out of that? Partnership. Can we have, I hope this won't upset anyone, research that is driven by like solution-based research, not publication-based research. I'm not saying we shouldn't publish, but I'm saying it would be nice from time to time, produce a paper that you can actually take to the ground and do something with it. I was actually scolding at my wife, doing a research that she will never do anything about, but it's quite interesting. So I'm planning to steal some stuff from it and do some chronic whatever initiative from that research. So we need research that is like this, not like this only. We need data aggressive data collection centers. Cape Town has one. Every private company is buying data from Cape Town, UCT. Why don't we have one? So data collection, that is very aggressive. You must know everything about everyone. China is doing it. Just do it. No one is going to mind. Just collect data. Just make it legally collected. Design programs that respond to live data. So live data makes us tweak even our entrepreneurship program. We don't do it normally. It's tweaked. It's not like a class thing. So design programs that come from live data. Have festivals. Well, can you have an Umlazi Mangosuthu festival? The idea is to promote a culture and changing that mindset of the township. And Mangosuthu is a big institution. Have a festival. A festival, maybe twice a year, a festival just to celebrate Umlazi and celebrate what Mangosuthu is doing. Most universities do this. They are the definer of their town. If you go to, I'm sure you can think of some now. MIT, I'm sure it defines its town. Harvard defines its town. So you can define your town by beginning to have festivals. Last one, remove academic programs that don't service the current and the future economy. Remove them. I won't go into that. It's something I've been fighting since I was SRC, so I won't go into that. But remove them. They are not helping our kids. These graduates are not even helping us. They can't even think the way they are supposed to think because of a program that is designed for them just to pass. So we need to kind of reimagine program, remove time barrier. There are kids that are learning programming at grade 8 right now. Robotics. So I just want to, so that's us. We're thinking if ever you want to talk on a global scale, you want to talk about entrepreneurship, you need to talk about these things that actually entrepreneurs make money from. If you don't deal with these things, you'll keep on thinking our children or entrepreneurs are failing. The system has not been crafted to make them understand what is the opportunity there. There are many opportunities. You can distribute coal in December and make serious money in Umlazi. Charcoal. I'm talking about serious money. You can probably not work for the whole year. Thank you.
Right, I did say I was excited about his presentation. He never disappoints. Is the video queued up? Ready? In the meantime, colleagues, line up your questions for Mr. Mafa. Let's keep them nice and brief to give him more time to explain. If you're not ready. Okay. So for our question and answers, you can just move to the mic in the middle for those of us who are inside the ICC. Is the video ready? After the video, we'll take the question and answers. Those of us who are joining us online, please raise your hand virtually and we'll give you an opportunity to ask a question. Thank you so much.
My name is Laurent Prével. I am the director of ENSIE. ENSIE is a French engineering school in computer science. ENSIE was founded in 1968 and graduated around 160 computer engineers per year. I really want to thank you for your invitation to this international week at the Mangosuthu University of Technology. I'm sorry I can't be physically with you, but I want to let you know that I'm really ready to build some partnership with schools and universities in South Africa. By the way, ENSIE has an incubator, which is called C19, which allows our students to set up their startup. So I will really be happy if we could organize some exchanges with you for training and for innovation and for entrepreneurship. So thank you again, and see you soon in Paris.
My name is Les Kider. I'm the director of the cluster C19, which is a spin-off of ENSU. Let me introduce you to this original space. The C19 was thought and designed as a continuity of the school's training, but also as a tool to enhance its skills like training, research, and innovation. The C19 is a place that brings together researchers, entrepreneurs, and students in order to stimulate innovation and the emergence of collaborative projects between the different populations.
Hi, I'm Valerie Maginot, a student at NCU. In my third year studying video games and digital interactions, this summer I worked in the summer school program made by the C19 with four other students, including three from NCU. Together, we worked on a project called LLCE, or Long Live the Ecosystem, which is a serious game designed for education, which takes the shape of a classic management game. This project allowed us to work on our skills that we learned during our studies, but also to have a hands-on approach to the entrepreneurial world. From financial planning to meeting potential clients, this project allowed us to discover how a company works in a way that we couldn't get in any classes, and we truly enjoyed the experience while doing so.
C19 is an incubator, but not only. It offers digital training for all ages and levels, and carries out research and development projects in partnership with public laboratories and companies. C19 offers technical and entrepreneurial support to these startups, as well as individual or shared premises, with access to the latest technological equipment, including computing center, technological platforms, with powerful computers and VR/ER headsets, and also two immersive virtual reality rooms. However, C19 is a cluster with a strong technical expertise. If you are looking for an innovative cluster that facilitates your integration into a complete value chain, I want to tell you that C19 is what you need for your project. Don't hesitate. Welcome to C19.
Hello, my name is Rokaye Benazi. I'm 20 years old. I'm a second year engineering student at ENSU. I'm also the community manager of DS, Junior Entreprise of my school. The movement of Junior Entreprise was born here in France in 1967 at ESSEC Business School, and by today, the concept has spread to 46 different countries around the world. To make it short, Junior Entreprise are student-run organizations that provide services to institutions, companies, startups, and individuals. DS will be celebrating this year its 41st anniversary. Since 1981, we have been working with our students on IT projects to satisfy our clients. On a personal level, I have been a junior entrepreneur for almost 1 year. DS was a great opportunity that provided me with an incredible challenge. It gave me the chance to meet outstanding people, helped me develop so many soft skills and most of all, give me the opportunity to spread my wings beyond my comfort zone. It was a unique experience.
Thank you, thank you. I'm sure many of us have questions for Mr. Mafa. For those of us who are here, we'll use the mic in the middle for questions. So I'm gonna take a round of questions and Mr. Mafa can just answer them one after another. For those of us who are joining us online, as usual, raise your virtual hand. We'll recognize you, give you an opportunity to ask a question. Thank you. Questions. Doc, I think you can start, followed by Matume. Followed by Stembile.
Thank you very much. Just want to say that was really a very exciting presentation. Thank you so much. And you will definitely be hearing from MUT. And also to assure you, I'm not sure if anyone's here from research, but one of the things that we look at in the generation of third stream income, but the larger umbrella activity, which is resource mobilization, is in fact commercialized research. And any type of commissioned research, which is supposed to be happening all the time, and yet we're missing the mark. I hear you completely. We're not joining the dots. So I think that that is definitely a point. You made it very well. Publications that are solution driven and for the people. So I think that you'll be happy to know that going forward, this is exactly what MUT is going to try to embark upon. And I fully agree, our location is a strength. We are actually not optimizing that strength. Other people from outside can see it. It's a great place for research. And I mean the publication research as well. But there's definitely a need to gather data. And if you as an organization already have the tools and the mechanisms for that, then most certainly you'll be hearing from us. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. Tume.
Good morning. It's Matume from UFS. I would like to congratulate you on the great work that you're doing. And, you know, one thing that excites me about what you are doing is that this is such a great opportunity for you to collaborate with the local universities here in the province. Back in the day, I was involved in a project in the Western Cape called the TWK project, which was a tripartite alliance between two universities in South Africa and a university, not a university, a community in the Western Cape. And it was an impoverished community. And also we had one international partner from the Netherlands where they were bringing students to come and do community engagement for 3 months. And those students would then come for 3 months, work on a project, compile a report for the next cohort that comes immediately after that. So the project keeps going on and on. So the opportunity here is for MUT to bring in an internationalization element where they collaborate with a strategic partner in Europe or wherever in the world, where they bring in students that come to do community engagement and collaborate with organizations such as yours, where they work on a particular structured program that develops the community, and the next group that comes don't start from scratch. They continue with the work and so on and so forth. So in the end, the university benefits, the community benefits, and I believe that
when you're working with the university, I believe that you will do great things together, because they will help you with the research which they've just confirmed now for, I guess you said, for FE. Yeah. Mutually beneficial. And also, speaking about the courses that are irrelevant, I once had a very interesting meeting with a university from India called Chandigarh, and what they do with their education system is that their courses are created based on, like, the best students are selected to collaborate with the academics, the curriculum developers, and industry, and then they customize the courses that they make to make them relevant for the industry, so that the students are ready for industry immediately when they complete their studies, because that type of a system allows them to stay ahead of other universities who are just teaching courses that are not going to benefit the students in the long run, if that makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that contribution. You almost lost me when you said tripartite alliance. I'm like, you too? But it wasn't that alliance. Ms. Nkosi?
Thank you. Siyabonga Baba for the lovely presentation and the interesting work that you are doing. I just have some couple of things, questions as well.
Project a bit. Thank you.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Firstly, I would like to comment on what you said regarding the entrepreneurship being a myth. I think you're quite right. In our society, it is something that even when it happens, you find that business people are drowning because they were not mentored or assisted while they were busy with their business. And you find that sometimes even the business collapses in township because there is no mentorship. So I'm asking, is there some kind of mentorship that you can provide for startup businesses in Umlazi? And you also spoke about Amadela Ngokubona, and you spoke about Amalokozane, the street forums that are trying to keep the Umlazi safe. And my question is, how do you then ensure that these community safety forums don't turn into Amadela Ngokubona, because greed can come into place and they turn out to be wanting more? For now, it's 50 rands. They would say they want 10%. I'm just making an example, 10% next year. And then someone says, if a private security company is being paid so much, then why aren't we? Because we don't have resources. So I'm just thinking, is there a way to guard against that? And also taking law into their own hands. My hometown is Newcastle, and we've had an incident where someone's phone was stolen, and they called these community safety forums, and they beat the person, even used that electric drill on the leg, and then at the end of the day, it was the wrong person. So, yeah. And then you talked about the businesses, lovely businesses that are at Umlazi and other ones that are going to still happen. But my question is the customer service. You said once we can have Buy at Umlazi campaign, but the customer service, buying at Ispaza and buying at Pick and Pay, customer service, it's totally different. The frowning face when you meet a lady, there's a brilliant business, because I can't bri and I'm single, so I don't have a man to bri at home. So if I need a bri, kukhona umama okhona at Umbilo, who you buy a meat at the butchery, she doesn't buy meat for you. You just buy your own meat, and then she's always got a fire, and then you ask her to bri, and then you pay 30 rands. And that's something nice. But talking to her, it's like
she's doing me a huge favor, of which she is, but it's a business at the end of the day. So I'm just saying customer service, it's a big deal for people that want to support local businesses. And my other question is, I've been in one of your data collection session, but I'm not quite. Session, and how do you then engage with the larger community? Because you find that in some of the spaces of community engagement, and I'm sure the Office of Prof. Mandlin would agree, that sometimes we tell people what they need, and whereas their priority is totally different from our priority. So in terms of getting the priority, and if you're talking to community leaders, how do we ensure that the information that they are giving is from the people and it's not their own agenda? I would like to say kudos for having those distributions that are going to be happening at Umlazi, the distribution hubs. And one of the things that is missing again at Umlazi is tourism. I've had a discussion with my HOD. I'm from the conservation department, and I spoke to him and said, we need a department of tourism. We can't have a university and have a lovely township, and nobody is taking tourists around to talk about this beautiful, beautiful area. And then the very last one, we spoke about my project, community engagement. And even when you are presenting the work that you do, nature and nature's resources are not included. I know that they can be connected somehow, but that's how we feel as ecologists, as conservationists, that most of these things happen before. And then when you hit a bang, then that's where we have to be involved. But if we co-create, co-plan with the environmentalists, with the ecologists, then I think we can ensure that our communities really, really move forward holistically, because the rivers at Umlazi are really, really dirty and they need rehabilitation if we are talking about the well-being of the communities. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Mafa. Yes. Remember, some of the responses can be deferred to the tea break.
I'll answer a few. I want to say thank you to the research department. I will tell Johan that we are expecting a beautiful letter of intention for partnership. We'll really appreciate that because the interest of our main funder, which is NetBank, has just focused a bit on Umlazi. So it'll be interesting to get something going. And then the issue of data collection, I think it's a low-hanging fruit for Mangosuthu. We're starting something in Mangaung, so you off. There will be a same guy like me who's going to go have coffee with everyone in Mangaung to do what we want to. We've learned something in Umlazi, we want to do it there. So if you want to connect, it would be great to see how we can actually work together with the University of Free State. We have an RPP program for mentorship that I said, in terms of responding to the issues we understand about entrepreneurship. We responded with an RBP. We've just taken 20 businesses for now, just to make them understand certain things and probably get them into a culture of knowing that you're doing business is different from having a job, and then make them meet other business people, but also have a relationship. You know, one of the businesses that we support, the only thing we do for that lady is meet. You know, when she's venting, we meet her, she vents, and she calls back to the shop. You know, when she's stressed, she knows who to call. When she wants to go to a spa, she calls one of our guys, let's go to a spa. Some of the things that business people need is an outlet to not be in that space that they are usually in. And people who think differently. So that's one of the outlets you're trying to provide, that they may meet people who are thinking systematically. It's not a structured program like normal entrepreneurship program. We encourage entrepreneurs we introduce them to relationship, but it's their responsibility to pursue those relationships further. If they are getting stuck, they can call us, but they must know that they need that. Not this thing of partnering a mentor. No, they must look, because social capital is something that they need. Some businesses don't have social capital. They think they're gonna survive on their own. So we're trying to kill that mentality. So our mentorship comes through that space. Look, in terms of the Amadela Mokbona, the lawlessness that could come from our street forums, there's not much we can do. We co-create. That means we go as far as the community go. We go with the community. The community just has to be empowered to own their own things and to actually journey through that. Now, I am saying we should actually professionalize these spaces because of that issue of somebody else capturing it. So if ever they professionalize it early and begin to institute it early, and it becomes a community thing, not a business thing, that means we choose who we want in our community to actually be a face, not a company, a face. So our hope is that we're creating faces in the community that they can actually relate with, not something else, you know. And I'm not saying we want to resolve the issue of lawlessness in the township. Lawlessness in the township is a culture thing. It's not a unique thing to the new phenomenon that we are experiencing in construction. It's a culture thing. The issue of governed spaces, like I told you, we're not governed in the township. So we need to kind of think, how do we bring governance, structure, law in our spaces? You know, levies, I mean, people like dogs issues are big on the news right now, right? Do you think those guys are paying levy for dogs? In the township, there's no such. So there's a lot of lawlessness as a culture, not just one issue in construction or in gangsterism. It's like there's a lot of people. So we need to think around that on how do we deal with introducing law, making things governable. You know, govern. Govern our own spaces like you govern your home. You know, in my house, there's 7 o'clock dinner. It's a law. Start with that a bit. A simple rule. Maybe next time, be in the house at 6. Next time. So you build laws progressively. So we need to deal with lawlessness. If you don't deal with it, you'll find yourself having more security budget in Mangosuthu. In terms of customer service, look, it's a conversation we must have as Black communities when it comes to servicing customers. Like I said, we have this job mentality. We have all kind of mindsets that are not pleasing to someone who's getting a service from us. It could be a complaint from like Umama Gadesh or Lapo, Brian Yama, but there's a complaint sometimes in an establishment that is, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but the food you ate at Max's on our investment circle. Yeah. I wasn't happy. I told them I wasn't happy. But it's one of those things that we have to teach, train. Also, Black communities need to learn to complain. Can you just be a Catherine? Or what do you call that lady? Karen. Can we have Black Karens? More Karens. Just create drama. You know, I took a photo at Woolworths in Mega City one day. The queue was just too long. I was like, I wouldn't have experienced this if I was in Glenwood or in Brea. Took a photo, put it on Facebook. Things began to move. Just be a Black Karen. Do something. If you don't do it, service won't improve. Put them on social media. Talk about them. They may say you're destroying their business, but another way you're actually asking them to improve. So do something that makes them alert that there's something I'm not happy about. If we don't do that, like what we usually do as Black communities, we suffer in silence. We do ourselves a disservice. And then there is Umlazi Tourism. I like Mangosuthu to build a relationship with them. I've tried. I don't know. We'll still have more coffees and see where we get to. But keep trying. Remember, relationships don't work overnight. You know, it's like, you know, when you want to hook up with a girl, you keep talking and talking and talking. That's how our systems work. I'm going to challenge Mangosuthu. Mangosuthu says, Nedbank has a big budget on greening things, green trust. So if nature conservation is keen, we can open the door to the trust. You can present. We can open the door. It's just that you must create a program. Nedbank is very clear on three things. One, it must empower the community to take care of it when you're gone. Two, it must create community assets. Like we wanted to plant fruits everywhere. We don't want to plant just trees. We're tired of just trees. We want fruits. So plant assets. If ever want to secure a river, let's secure it through an asset that people can actually be gaining something from. The third one, can that spin-off create jobs? Or some form of income, that the community begins to realize that our river is able to bring income if it's clean. So they look at those three things very carefully: ownership, assets, and job creation. Other than that, we can chat over tea. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Another round of applause for him. Miss Mkhize, to hand over a little token of our appreciation for Mr. Mafa, please.
He doesn't need one. Yes. He's carrying millions.
So,
well, this is our alumnus. We are very proud of him. He used to be in our convocation committee, and you can imagine when he had this one. So when I go overseas and they say, oh, what about Mlasi this? I speak about his projects. We imagine Mlasi. I don't know where I'm paying attention. So when people criticize, okay.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.